today. This appearance day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I went on to the database and I was looking at to see what Prabhupada had to say about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And there was only one lecture Prabhupada gave about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He gave a lecture in 1971, I believe it was. Yeah. 1971 in London. On the appearance day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but you know, he was talking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I studied that lecture, and I'm going to try to make a few of the points that Prabhupada made about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because obviously they would have been the most, what he thought were the most important things for us to know and remember about the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I'm not going to read it, I'm just going to try to use Prabhupada's lecture notes as like a, how would you say it, notes to speak from. That might be better. So the first point Prabhupada was making was how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a grihastha. I mean, he wasn't a sannyasi, and he was a very responsible officer. He was a magistrate, in other words, he was a judge. And he makes a point about his sadhana, that he, even as a grihastha, with a lot of responsibilities, well, he's a magistrate, he was a judge, he kept a very strict schedule. He used to, return home at 7 o'clock, or no, sorry, he'd return home at like 5 or 6 o'clock, and then immediately we'd have dinner, and by 7 o'clock he was taking rest, and he would wake up at 12 o'clock. So Prabhupada, that was the first point he's making, how regulated he was. And he's making the point that in that lecture how we should try to follow in his footsteps. When he woke up at 12 o'clock, he was writing. He wrote books. And he was, you know, that was his engagement from 12 o'clock midnight when he woke up till, you know, shortly before he left for work. In addition to writing books, Prabhupada mentions he excavated the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya and organized how to develop that birth site. And he did a lot of other preaching. Oh, he mentions also that he attempted to sell books about Vaishnava philosophy, and in particular Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, to foreign countries. And as an example of that, he gave that he sold that book, Life and Precepts of Chaitanya, to McGill University in Montreal, and that was in 1896, the same year, coincidentally, that Srila Prabhupada appeared. And so Prabhupada, throughout the lecture, kind of repeatedly made the point that from his life, we should learn how one can be a preacher in any stage of life. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether one is sannyas or grihastha or whatever, you know, one can be a preacher. That was the example he gave. He also went on in this particular lecture to mention how he was in charge of Jagannath Puri, because the system was that the temple at that time, very big temple, was managed by a committee, and the magistrate of Jagannath Puri was the chairman of that committee. So in that sense, he was the manager of the Jagannath temple in Jagannath Puri. And yeah, he was, you know, he presided over that board. So on one occasion, Prabhupada only tells one story in this particular lecture about his life, but it's an interesting one. He mentions how, since he was both the magistrate, you know, in Jagannath Puri, and also he was the chairman of that board, when there was a problem arose in that province where, you know, some part of Orissa, Utkal, actually, there was a personality who was claiming to be Vishnu, Mahavishnu, and it was causing a disturbance in some of these villages what was going on was this personality apparently was a yogi and of some sort, and he had some mystic powers, and which he was displaying. And the people, not all the people, but some of the people in these villages, they got bewildered by that. They thought, well, maybe he really is Mahavishnu. So on his request, on the yogi's request, they, you know, they were sending their wives and daughters to dance with him, do like a imitation rasa dance in the evenings. And so some of the other villagers, they were becoming very disturbed by this because, you know, this was like unheard of. And, you know, they didn't, some of the other villagers weren't quite as naive and they didn't buy into it. They thought, no, wait a second, this guy's not Mahavishnu, and this is totally outrageous, you know. So they complained. They complained to the British, actually. And the British, they figured, well, we don't know quite how to deal with this, so, you know, it doesn't mention the man's name, but he could understand that Bhaktivinoda Thakur probably was be a good person to try to deal with this. So they asked him to take care of it, and which he was happy to do. So he went to that village, and when he arrived at the village, this yogi, as I said, apparently did have some kind of mystic powers. He immediately knew who he was, and he said, "Oh, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, very nice, you know, that you have come. So, you know, I will make you king of India." He says, "Please don't disturb my activities, though. You know, please don't disturb anything like that." So, you know, he was trying to pacify him or not to, you know, derail him or whatever. So anyway, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur was equally diplomatic in how he responded. He said, "Oh, you know, you're such a nice yogi and such a great personality. Why are you wasting your time here in this small village? You should come to Jagannath Puri. There's so much more happening there. You know, you could just come to the temple and see Jagannath in the temple. Why are you spending, you know, time here in the village like that?" So this yogi responded, "Oh, Jagannath, Didi, that is wood." He said, "That is wood. I am the supreme person. You know, I am actually Mahavishnu in person, you know." And so when Bhaktivinoda Thakur heard that, he became angry like fire because, you know, he's making an offense. So he couldn't tolerate that. So he had him arrested. And what happened was, as soon as he attempted to arrest him, immediately the constables and Bhaktivinoda Thakur became affected by a high fever. And apparently, it's mentioned, Prabhupada mentions 105 degrees fever, which is like a very high fever. I mean, you die when you get up that high, you know, in terms of a fever. So anyways, but they did arrest him. And when he got home, you know, this is like, it wasn't like everybody was kind of supporting him here, you know, because on the one hand, he was very determined and convinced he was doing the right thing. But meantime, you know, here's this yogi manifesting these different mystic powers, and then when they come to arrest him, the whole posse, so to speak, you know, is stricken with a high fever like that. And, you know, there was people who were thinking, wait, maybe we're making a mistake here, you know, including his wife. Because when he got home, his wife's response was, "What are you doing? You know, you're going to get us all killed. You're trying to arrest this personality. You're coming down with a high fever. Everybody who, you know, attempted to discipline him like this, the same thing is happening to them." And actually, it happened to his family as well. And, you know, even his wife was kind of like concerned. "Wait, you're doing the right thing. You sure you know what you're doing?" And his reply was, he said, "Yes, let us all die, but this rascal must be punished." So, you know, he was convinced and determined that this man was bogus and that he had to be, you know, punished. And he wasn't deterred. He wasn't bewildered by his having a fever, all the people who were, you know, assisting him having a fever, even his own family. He could see beyond that. And he could understand that this, okay, like I was saying, possibly this man is some yogi, has some mystic power. It's not, you know, it's not having a mystic power and we know this as devotees more than anybody, because from hearing the Bhagavatam, having a mystic power does not necessarily at all mean that you're at all spiritual. You know, I mean, demoniac people can have mystic powers, and we've had, you know, getting repeated information of that as we're going through the Bhagavatam canto by canto, and we're seeing even right now, we're, and not that the Rasa Muni was demoniac. Well, what he was attempting to do was demoniac, you know, punish a pure devotee like Maharaj Ambarish. But we could see that you could have mystic powers and not at all be, you know, advanced in devotional service or any, and have anything to do with devotional service. You can still have mystic powers. So he could understand that this man was something like that in that category. You know, he had some mystic power, so what? You know, Hiranyakasipu had mystic powers. Does that mean he was, you know, some great spiritual personality? Or no, of course, no, not at all. So, but he, at the same time, simultaneously, he could understand that he was a total rascal and he had to be punished. And he was determined to do that. So, despite the fact that everybody, him, his whole family, everybody was, you know, being stricken with this high fever, he proceeded, and you know, they had the trial, and at the time of the trial, they he went through the whole trial, and then they convicted him, you know, being guilty. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, he had the knowledge, he understood that there was some relationship between the hair, you know, it's said, I've heard Prabhupada said elsewhere that there's some relationship, I don't know exactly how it works, between the hair of these mystic yogis and the powers that they have. And there's some, anyway. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur decided, okay, well, we have to cut off this man's hair. You know? And so he ordered that. Okay, barbers, cut the hair, but they were all afraid. They refused to, you know, go forward because they were scared. No. Well, they had to bring you in on a palanquin. You know, they're thinking they have to bring you, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You have to be brought in on a palanquin, you know, to preside at that court case. And everybody else, all these constables, they got the high fever in your family. And, you know, no, we're not doing it. So they balked. They refused to follow his instruction of, you know, cutting the man's hair. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, okay, give me the scissors. You know, give me the scissors. And they gave him the scissors, and he went forward, and he cut his hair. You know, obviously they were restraining him and everything. And he cut his hair personally. And apparently, as soon as they cut his hair, he became a lot weaker. And they transported him to jail, and Prabhupada mentions that this incarnation of Vishnu managed to take some poison, and he died after he was in jail for 6 months, so... So in other words, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sized it up correctly, that it was just what, you know, he was thinking. This guy had this particular, this, well, guy, yogi, whatever you want to call him, he had some mystic power somehow or another, and but he was obviously not Vishnu, and he was a rascal, and he needed to be punished, and he did it. And it took, you know, great courage to do that. And Prabhupada goes on to say in that lecture, after describing that incident, he said, this was one incident. There were many incidents. He was a very strong man. He punished many pandas and tirthas who exploit visitors. Pandas are Brahmins, and they live at different, you know, places of pilgrimage that were, you know, like places of spiritual significance. Like, where, like, for instance, there's pandas at the birthplace of Radharani. What's that? Yeah, said it in Varshana. Yeah, Varshana and Nandagram and like that. You know, these pandas, a lot of devotees have probably experienced them. They can be kind of pretty heavy dudes, to be honest with you. They're Brahmins, apparently. And but when the pilgrims come, they, you know, basically kind of like force themselves upon you sometimes. And, you know, they want to take you and take you around and show you, explain everything. And then they expect quite a good dakshin. You know, and they not only, sometimes they demand it, and sometimes it's come to the point where they even get physical, you know, I mean, they hit devotees with something, or so it's going to be a real problem, you know, I mean, and even to this day, it's a problem, what to speak of, you know, back then it was a problem, and even to this day, it's a problem. So anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur dealt with those personalities. He says he punished many pandas who would exploit visitors when they came. So, And Prabhupada concludes, this is the position of a devotee. In spite of his becoming a responsible magistrate, a householder, still he was acharya. So in other words, the fact that he was, and Prabhupada throughout this lecture repeatedly made that point, that despite the fact that he was a grihastha, he took great responsibility in trying to execute devotional service and reestablish it. A couple other isolated remarks where Prabhupada said he was an ideal guru. Once again, he says he was not a sannyasi. He was a grihastha, householder. He was living with family, wife, and children. Still, he was guru. And then he goes on. So anyone can become a guru. Not just a sannyasi can become a guru. A householder also can become a guru, provided he knows the science. And he points out that... elsewhere in the lecture, he said, we should adore and worship Bhaktivinoda Thakur because in the modern age, he reestablished or reintroduced the disciplic succession. Previous to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, unfortunately, somehow or another, Vaishnavism had kind of fallen into ill repute. You know, there was some breakdown in the disciplic succession, you know, because, I mean, there's Lord Chaitanya and then the six Goswamis, and then you had personalities like Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami and then Narottam Das Thakur and later Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. But there was some gap someplace along the line, you know, just kind of things kind of got watered down and Vaishnavism wasn't considered very respectable. And so anyway, somehow or another Bhaktivinoda Thakur reintroduced, he reestablished the disciplic succession and elevated Vaishnavism back up to to a respectable status, and so he gets great credit for that. Prabhupada also mentions that I mentioned earlier that he used to write books from midnight onwards until he had to resume his other duties, but Prabhupada mentions he wrote about 100 books. It's a lot of books. He was the author of 100 books. He mentions the title of two of those, the Chaitanya Shikshamrita and the Jiva Dharma, in that lecture, as being particularly important. And he also mentions that he was the author of a lot of songs, and he specifically mentioned that song, Gai Gora Madhusvare, that song, as being, I guess, a particularly famous song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's. So Prabhupada said that these are very important, both these songs and the books are very important, and that the devotees should try to gradually present them. Yeah. Yeah. Which two? Jaranha. And which? Yeah, right. Both of those Bhaktivinoda Thakur songs, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur, they're a morning program. No, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur as well. But anyway, so in conclusion at lecture, he says, so our adoration and worship to Bhaktivinoda Thakur today because he may bless us to make peaceful progress in Krishna consciousness. So that's the idea. That's, why we observe these special... one of the reasons why we observe these special occasions, because these acharyas are still present. And it's not like, oh, he's dead and gone and what can he do now? They're they're very much present, and by taking shelter, praying for their mercy, Prabhupada says here, we can become blessed to make peaceful progress in Krishna consciousness, which is of course what we're interested in. So, does anybody have anything additional they'd like to say about the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or have any questions about what I've said up till this point? Because otherwise I'm going to go on and just kind of make a couple other points which are related to this, but not exactly right on his, talking about his life directly. Anything? Yeah, Bhaktivinoda. There's so many, obviously more wonderful things that could be said, yeah.
Vegas.
I'm Lubak, the program.
Yeah, thank you for a nice description of, especially the pastime of that particular yogi, whose name was Bishop Kishane, by the way. One point I wanted to just emphasize is that the arrest was not made merely on the grounds of dancing with some women or their wives. It went much farther than that. There was actually illicit sexual activity that was going on, not only with the wives, but with some of the daughters. And that's what the big upheaval was, that many of the men, husbands, upright, righteous persons, felt that this was going far beyond what should even be done. So, therefore, that was really the big thing. And, of course, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur challenged him, the yogi took on a very big, heavy position. Yeah, you try to do anything to me and I'll kill you. So, but what's so nice about what you had mentioned is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just like King Ambarish, in the same way, he simply took shelter of the Supreme Lord and went forward and did his duty. And that's what was so enviable and likable about this. He didn't care about the results to himself. His only concern was, how can he in any way preserve the understanding of the glory and the greatness of Lord Vishnu, and to do this, to put this cursed, offensive person out of existence. That was his whole idea. So I just wanted to emphasize that the grounds for the arrest was not merely dancing. It went further than that, because dancing, yes, it's wrong, but it's not as severely or extensively wrong as taking it to the much more illicit level.
Yeah, I suspected as much, but Prabhupada didn't specifically mention that in the lecture, so I thought... But anyway, thank you.
There are biographies of this which actually...
Oh, no, I know it's correct.
...much more extensively.
Yeah. Archita Prabhu.
Thank you. A couple of points that are directly related to us, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that in addition to his own inimitable energy that he put into his work, he was such a brilliant magistrate that he dispatched of things in 5 minutes that people would take days to deliberate over, and renovating Vaishnavism in general. He also gave the world his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, by praying for a ray of Vishnu, which, by the way, Prabhupada said we shouldn't do. Some devotees asked Prabhupada, should we pray for a ray of Vishnu when we want to have children? Prabhupada said, no, you're not Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Mm-hmm. So he brought Bhaktisiddhanta into the world, one of 10 children. I mean, he was just amazing. We can't even conceive nowadays of raising 2 or 3 children. It's so problematic, but 10 children and being a magistrate and writing, and it was just amazing. You cannot imitate such a personality. And then the other thing that's directly related to us in ISKCON is that many of the newer devotees may not know that he had a compound just on the other side of Jalangi from our Mayapur complex that we have now today. And while chanting there, he had that vision that a great temple would arise on the other side of the river, and international devotees would come there and chant Hare Krishna together. And we see that it's been realized, or it's still in the process of being realized. So he was a visionary. Obviously, he could see the future.
Hare Krishna. I was just astounded to read earlier today that, I mean, we all know of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's role as a magistrate, his role as vanquishing a few demons that needed vanquishing. But he was also a very skilled teacher. He did a number of different things in his younger life from the time of about age 15 on. It's just astounding. He wore many, many, many different hats. Anyway, that's all. Thank you.
Yeah. Welcome. Yeah. Oh, Vijay first, and then welcome. Yeah.
He also started the Bhakti Riksha. Again, he had thousands of
people involved in this bhakti riksha all around West Bengal there. So he was preaching a lot.
Maybe could you explain a little bit what that is for some of our...
Bhakti riksha, that's where he preaches, and they have programs, and then from one program that expands to other programs, and it just thousands and thousands of... It's like we have bhakti rikshas all over the movement now. So actually, I believe it started with Lord Nityananda, and then he picked it up again, and he made one amazing statement that I try to meditate on when I'm distributing books. When will I, with a humble heart, go out and spread the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? It's a statement that I think that's one of his songs. So, yeah, he was an amazing preacher. And there's that one instance where there was the big problem with the Brahmanas were thinking that they're the only ones that should accept, should be Brahmanas. So there was supposed to be a big meeting of the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wasn't healthy. So he was a little frustrated. Who's gonna make the Vaishnava presentation? So then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he spoke to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He said, yes, you can make the presentation. So then he did the... He went to this big gathering, like I think it was thousands of people. The Brahmanas were there, the Vaishnavas were there. And first the Brahmanas went up and spoke, and then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he went and spoke. And first he was glorifying the Brahmanas. And then he started speaking Shastra about how anybody who develops the qualities of a Brahmana, then he could be a Brahmana. And he went on, so many verses, on and on and on. And then so many people were like, wow, look, they were so impressed. And of course, the joy of the Brahmanas, was gone. And the result of it was that he completely defeated the Brahmanas. And at the end of it, he was so much respected that after when he finished speaking, just at the last conference, nobody could say anything, nobody could defeat him. So he was the last speaker, and everybody just thronged towards him to touch his feet. It was like a stampede, and the police didn't know what to do. So one of them got this brilliant idea, getting a big bucket of water, and they put his feet in it, and then they started throwing the water out to everybody. And then everybody was appeased. They were satisfied.
Is this in that book about him? That
I think it's in the book. Yeah, oh. Yeah, it's in the book. Yeah, amazing.
Such a notable.
Yes, it is mentioned. He is the pioneer, the father of this Krishna consciousness movement. We owe a lot to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur for bringing his son, and after our Prabhupada. He's one of the first book distributors, as you mentioned. He sent the books to Macmillan. And through his all beautiful songs, the deep feelings that Vaishnava feels for the conditioned souls is there. And he plays himself in a very humble way the role of an impersonalist, materialist, even like demoniac sometimes. You say, what? Besides all this, although we don't probably qualify to hear more about, he is a Nitya Siddha, eternally liberated soul. Right. We've been hearing about the external things that he's doing for spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement, but actually he's considered to be an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya. And his position is totally like difficult to understand, because when you read his songs, when you see his life and all the children he has, the work that he does, it just appears to be an ordinary man for somebody else. But for us, he's a Nitya Siddha, eternally liberated soul. And we're very fortunate to have...
So that means he was never conditioned. It appears that he was conditioned, but...
Right.
always remembering Krishna.
Right.
Anybody else? Yes, Gauridas Pandit.
I'm just trying to count how many songs he wrote. It's like 250, and there's still a lot more. So it's amazing how many songs he wrote, like Gopinath, Jasomati Nandan, and how humble he was, like in the Gopinath song. Well, Gopinath, I am a rascal. I have no qualifications, although he's most qualified. So that's just what amazes me, is how humble he was, despite being such a pure devotee. And we use so many of his songs. And with Vishnu John, we like to sing Gopinath and so many of his songs. So, all glories to Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Okay. Anybody else, anything? I think I'm going to leave it at that, actually, just so we don't lose the focus. Was there anybody? Okay, that's it. So, yeah. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai.
Was the one that predicted that Srila Prabhupada was going to come to the Western countries, something like that. I don't know. I want to know that.
Is that right? Somebody did. Somebody predicted that here.
Yeah.
Sanapati Bhakta. No, that was,
Yeah. He was predicting that great personality is going to come to the Western countries, and that was Srila Prabhupada. But he was predicting that back in the days.
Yeah. He's visionary.
Some of it I had to hear on the internet because of some business I had there. But I was hearing it. Sorry, I wasn't here though.